Hello, I'm Pinakin Munshi, and we are now going to cover the chapter 2, which is on fundamentals of inventory. Primary corporate objective of any business is to earn profits for its shareholders or business partners. In short, we say earn profits for its stakeholders, and stakeholders will include the employees, the customers, the suppliers, and of course the shareholders of the company. So the business invests funds in fixed assets like equipment and facilities. So when we say fixed assets, it will be like machines, equipment, storage equipment, and facilities will be, you know, of course, the factory building, etc. And along with that, you have so many utilities, etc. You may require compressed line, you may require certain gases, etc. So all those facilities. And current assets are, you know, like inventories. The profit it can make depends upon the margin it earns on the inventory it turns around to manufacture and sell the finished product. So basically, the company is buying the raw materials, adding value, and selling it. So what is the value addition it does decides the margin. And somewhere, the margin depends on the inventory turns. That means how many times it is able to turn its inventory. Like for example, if you're selling, take the example of a trading business. You're selling 1,000 products or 1,000 pieces of one product per annum. You are holding an inventory of, let's say, 200 numbers of that product. Then in a year, you are churning your inventory 5 times. So this is the inventory turns that you are achieving. So higher the number of inventory turns that you are able to achieve means that you are operating with a lower inventory, which means that you are blocking lesser working capital in your inventory. The main task of the head of materials management function is to decide how much inventory to hold at each category. For example, the raw material, the work in process, and the finished goods. So at various locations and how long the inventories will be held. The function head is often required to hold a larger inventory due to pressures that exist. So when we talk of the function heads, we are talking of the procurement function, we are talking of the operations or the production function, and also the sales and marketing or the distribution function. Now, here is an example of how the inventory in an organization is maintained. So, inventory is the stock of material which is maintained to satisfy the customer demand or to support production of goods and services. So, there are two parts of it. When we say customer demand, we are talking of the finished goods. And we talk of support production and goods and services, we are talking of the raw materials or the work in process. So take the example of the water tank. You have inflow of material, which is, let's say, the inflow of water into the tank. There is an outflow of the material. So that means there is also water which is flowing out as per the demand. There is a scrap flow. That means there is some amount of wastage which is generated in the system. And as you know, in any system, like for example, if you look at a manufacture of a car, now the door, etc., have an irregular shape, whereas the steel coils, the steel sheet which comes, you know, from the rolling mill, will be in a in the form of a particular width. So when you punch the door of a car, there are going to be some wastages. So there will always be some scrap which is generated in a manufacturing setup, and the net result of all these, that is the input, the outflow, and the scrap flow. So there are two outflow. One is in the form of the finished goods. The other is in the form of a scrap. And this will decide what will be your inventory level. Outward flow of water represents the demand for material in the inventory. So another outward flow is scrap, as we have seen, and most manufacturing processes will have some form of scrap which is generated in the process. The difference between the inflow rate and the outflow rate determines the level of the inventory. Now, I would not totally agree with that definition, because if both the rates are constant, you still will have inventory. So it depends how much level you plan to start with. So if the inlet and the outlet are same, whatever level your inventory may be, it will remain at that level. It will increase if your outflow is less or your inflow is more. And it will decrease if your inflow is less or your outflow is more. I hope this makes it very clear. So inventories rise when more material flows into the tank than flows out, which is what we explained. The profit is primarily decided by how much material outflow is there in the form of a product. So very clear. If you're generating more scrap, you're destroying value, because you are buying the raw material. The raw material may be bought at X value, but the scrap which is generated will be sold at a fraction of the cost at which you have purchased the material. On the other hand, the finished goods that you have produced is the value-added product. That means that you are going to sell it at a much higher price as compared to the cost at which you have procured the raw material. So the profit is going to come from how little scrap you generate and how much value addition you can do in the form of finished product. Not in inventory level, but the inventory turnover decides the business or the business unit's earning. So this we saw, that if you are able to turn your inventory more number of times, that means, let us say that you are holding inventory enough only for 1 month, 1 month of operation, then your earning will be more, because you are not blocking your inventory your working capital in the form of inventory. But take another example. You have only 3 turnover of inventory in a year. It means that your inventory, you are holding 4 months inventory. So every 4 months, your inventory is being turned over. Now that's very low. That's very high inventory that you are carrying. Now the number of inventory turns also depends on the industry and the nature of the business. But overall, if you can operate with, let's say, 12 inventory turns in a year, that's very good metric. Of course, you can always do better. And today companies are aiming for, you know, turning the inventory more number of times. It could be like up to 30 times in a year. What are the business pressures for holding larger inventory? So inventories enable smooth processes in the business unit and provide a high degree of flexibility that is needed to react to exceptional situation. So one, we said that there is no possibility of a stock out, because inventories are always available. Suppose you have a huge order coming from a customer, which is a make to order, then you are able to change your schedules and immediately produce the material because you have the raw material. Suppose you did not have the raw material, you would have to wait for the material to come from the supplier. Only then you can manufacture that material. So it gives you flexibility. It also ensures smooth processes. Stockout means losing the customer confidence. So in the earlier chapter, we saw that many a times customers will not wait for a product. So you go to a shop and you don't find a particular product, you will not say that, okay, I will come back when the product comes. He may buy another product, or he may go to another shop and purchase the product. So it's an opportunity lost. So stockouts is one, losing the customer, and it's also opportunity loss for the business. Finished goods stocks make products presentable for prospective customers. So when you have the finished goods stocks, you are able to promise to the customer, you are able to show the product to the customer. You go to buy a car and you say that I want a red color car, but the dealer says, well, I don't have the car to show you. You can see the chip on the panel or some sample paint, you know, the patch which is there, that may not satisfy the customer. So finished goods stock certainly makes the product presentable. No customer likes to wait. So unless your product is very compelling, the customers will not wait. Yes, you will find that there are certain cars for which there is a waiting period because they are in high demand. Customers are willing to wait for it because there is a unique selling proposition, maybe, as far as the customers are concerned. But otherwise, customers will only wait for a reasonable period of time for a product if it's a very expensive and major thing. For other things, they will want it immediately. You go to a shop and try to buy a shirt, you're not going to wait for 2 days for that shirt. You will want to go and purchase something X stock. Whenever we run out of raw material or components inventory, we incur cost of lost production. So this is another thing. Imagine that you don't have a raw material or you don't have a component, and because of that, your machines stop, your manufacturing activity stops. It may not be for the entire manufacturing unit, but one line stops. That stoppage of the line is a cost to the production. Why? Because the people are going to be idle. The machine which is supposed to add value to your product are sitting idle, which means they are not adding value. So this is how you will be incurring a cost or a loss. Ordering cost per year increases with the number of orders placed throughout the year. So cost of ordering from the plant, your ordering cost goes up because if you have too many orders. Now, every time, let's say this is a make to order item. So when you receive an order, then the machine is set up, the raw material or the components may be issued to the machine, and you have to set up the machine. So whenever the product differs, there may be dies which may have to be changed. So in case it's a cutting or a pressing machine, etc., as a press, then you have to change the die. Initially, when you start the machine, there will be some scrap generated before the machine can be totally standardized, or the process is set completely. Give you an example. One of the first companies that I worked in used to make aluminum foil. So you have to pass the aluminum sheet through the rolls, and when you start the process, initial few meters will be scrap because it comes out in a chewed form. So unless it is wound on the spool and certain tension is applied and the foil comes to the right gauge, till such time, whatever comes out of the rolling mill is scrap. So most of the manufacturing process during the startup or the setup phase will generate scrap or material which is not of a standard quality. Bigger order size results in larger inventory, but also decreases the number of orders released and thereby ordering cost. So if you have a big order, it means that you're going to have a long production run. Now, when you have a long production run, you do the setup and then you keep on producing the product without any changeover. So this reduces your overall cost. And by doing so, it is going to reduce your total production cost and also your ordering cost. So here is an example of ordering cost. So this is relating to purchasing department. The salary and wages of the people is 2,50,000. The traveling expenses of the purchase and the follow-up expenses for following up with the supplier, that's about 8 lakhs. And then the cost of bill payment, because there is a separate department called as accounts payable, and they will be checking the bills against the GRN, that is goods receipt note, and then passing the payments, etc. So all these things, all these processes are actually costing you money. And if you look at the cost per order, if you're releasing like 3,400 orders, then it's coming to 120 rupees per order. So that means every order that you place is going to cost you 120 rupees. So coming to this setup cost, the cost is common in the industry where production takes place in batches. So as we said, you know, in batches, after every batch, if you're changing the product to another product, you have to change the die, you have to change the machine settings, and then set up the equipment. And the initial few products that you make will be, you know, not having the right quality. So the cost involved in the changeover from one batch to another is the setup cost, because it's also going to result in downtime of the machine. Your machine may be idle for the time when you stop the production, switch over the dies, etc., to the next product, then you set it up, and then you start the machine. So it includes labor and time and extra scrap and rework. Rework because some of the material that comes out, which is far from perfect or not of the right quality, that may have to be reworked to make it meet the right quality. Setup cost is independent of the new batch size. So this factor stresses the need for a large supply of items under the production and holding them in inventory. So what it means is the setup cost is independent of the lot size. Let us say the setup cost for one particular, switching from one product to the other is 10,000 rupees. This 10,000 rupees will be independent of whether you're going to make 10 parts or you're going to make 1,000 parts, because that is a one-time cost which you are incurring. So what it means is, if you are going to have a larger supply of items, larger production run, then the cost per item will get reduced. So in this case, if I say 10,000 rupees is my changeover cost or setup cost, and I'm making 1,000 items, then my cost per item is only 10 rupees. But imagine if I do a setup or a changeover for only 10 items and 10,000 is the cost, then my changeover cost is coming to 1,000 rupees per item, per product. I hope this is clear. Labor and equipment utilization. So by creating larger inventory through high volume purchases or production orders, business units can increase labor productivity and facility utilization. So imagine you are doing, let's say, 3 changeovers in a day, and each changeover takes 2 hours. So out of 24 hours, 6 hours will be lost only for the changeover. Now take another case, where you only have one changeover in 24 hours. So here you're going to lose only 2 hours. So your equipment utilization is going to go up manifold. Your machine can operate continuously and produce the product. Value addition can be done with a loss of only 2 hours, which is one changeover. So this is the reason many a times organizations produce a larger batch, although the requirement may not be there, so that they can fully utilize the equipment. And this particularly happens when you have a shortage of capacity. So let us say that the demand is for 5,000 items or 5,000 product numbers per month, and you have a capacity of 4,500. So how can you increase that capacity? By reducing the number of changeovers or the setup time, so that your machine is utilized more for the productive activity and less for the changeover activities or the setup activities. Transportation and handling cost. So many times outward freight charges can be reduced by increasing the inventory levels. Having adequate inventory allows the business unit to arrange full containers. So there are two things. You have an order for 100 pieces, but you only have 50 pieces in stock. So again, you are going to have to ship the material 50 pieces now, and 50 pieces later, which means you are going to incur the transportation cost twice. The other case is you have a requirement only 50 pieces, but you have 100 pieces in stock. Maybe you can ship out the 100 pieces at one time instead of shipping out 50 now and 50 later. So if you have a higher inventory, you can optimize your outward transportation and handling cost. So this again depends upon the business and at what is the predicted sale, you know, from a particular outlet, that you decide these things. So many times the inventory helps you to optimize on your distribution cost. So what are the other pressures, you know, for holding larger inventories? Quantity discounts, special offers, or price increases. So it's quite common for suppliers to announce extra quantity discounts for a limited period. It's a common practice. Most organizations have a target. They have to achieve certain sales numbers, you know, per month. Now, towards the month end, they find that the numbers are still short. They were supposed to achieve a sale of, let's say, 100 crores, and they have managed to do only 90 crores. What happens in the last 2-3 days, there will be some extra discounts which are announced. And this is a time when a buyer can actually take advantage and place orders at a discounted price. Because here, the inventory carrying cost of just a few days will be offsetted by the discount which is being offered. So material managers often wish to protect themselves against anticipated price increase. So they place orders before the new price becomes operational. This is what we call as a speculative inventory. You are aware that a shortage is being created in the market, or that a price increase is going to come for a particular commodity or a particular raw material. So what you do is you try to hedge. You try to buy more quantity than that is required. It's a raw material. Your requirement is 10 tons per month. But because you know that there is a shortage, you're going to go and place order for 20 tons. You're going to place order for one extra month because it's going to save you from the price increase for one more month. So this is another reason why, you know, sometimes material managers will place a higher order. Hedging against raw material price fluctuations. So it's prudent for jewelry business units to buy gold immediately after receipt of a customer order, irrespective of delivery dates. This increases their inventory, but simultaneously protects gross margin. Now, this is partly also the case which we talked in the previous slide about speculation. So when you say hedging, hedging is also, you know, you are stocking higher stocks to guard against fluctuation in prices, etc. The case here is slightly different. In jewelry case, when you go to buy a jewelry, the jeweler will you know, tell you that today's gold rate is X, and I will sell you the jewelry at X plus some percentage. And that percentage will be two things. One is the making charges, which can vary depending upon the jewelry store, and the taxes. Now, while he is selling the jewelry, let's say he has got a total inventory of 1 ton of gold throughout his system. Now, across all the places, he has sold 10 kg of gold today at today's price, at today's gold price. Now, he does not know the next day the prices will be higher or lower. So what he does, he buys 10 kg of gold at today's price. So the gold that he was already holding in his system may have been bought at a higher price or a lower price. But to him, it will not make a difference, because if he sold the gold today for X price, he has also purchased same quantity of gold at the same price from the market, or maybe slightly lower price. Here, the hedging also works. Suppose he knows for sure that the prices are going to fall the next day, he may not cover the inventory. That means he will not buy the gold. He will wait for one day because he has sold at X price, but tomorrow he is going to buy the gold at X minus something, X minus 2%, let's say. So this is the hedging for the raw material prices. So inventory serves as a buffer between supply and demand. So you have supply, it can be from your supplier, it can be from you to the market. Demand can be from the customer market, can be from the distribution network, can be from the retailer. Customer demand and the finished product. So like I said, the finished product that you are holding, that is the supply. Customer demand is what the market is demanding. So we took the example of the car where, you know, the cars, there is a waiting period. So here, the finished product is not available, but there is a customer demand. So, you know, if there is an inventory, it acts as a buffer. But in the case of the car that we took, the buffer is not there because the capability of the company to produce cars is limited, whereas the demand is much more. So the gap is always there and the waiting period will be there. And what happens is when the demand falls below the manufacturing or the production level, then the inventory starts building up. Finished product and the component availability. So the demand for finished product and the availability of the components. So again, here the same thing. If the finished product requirement is low, but the component availability is high, then there will be a buffer created. But if the component supply is low, and this happened some time ago, cars were not available because the microprocessor chip, which controls the engine of the car, they were in short supply. So you can see how the finished product and the component availability, how a buffer would have helped. So here, the buffer in the microprocessor chip could have ensured a better supply of the finished product. Requirements for an operation and the output from the previous operation. So we saw this within the manufacturing, you have multiple equipment or machines where the output from one machine feeds the next machine. So you sometimes require a buffer in between to ensure uninterrupted production. Parts and materials to begin production and supplies of the material. So whenever you have to float a lot ticket, you know, a production lot, then you require all the raw materials or the components to begin the manufacture. Because let us say that you have to assemble a laptop. Now you have everything, but you don't have the screen, the display. You cannot assemble it. Or you have everything, but you don't have a motherboard. Or you don't have the microprocessor chip. So you will not be able to produce it. So here is the part, you require all the parts which are as per the bill of material to start the production process. So coming to inventory classification, what are the kinds of inventory? The inventories held by the business unit can be classified according to functions they perform. So you have these four or five categories. Anticipation inventory, and we will see what they mean in the coming slides. Fluctuation inventory, or what we also call as a safety stock. Lot size inventory and transportation inventory. So let's look at what each one means. So anticipation inventories, they are built up in anticipation of future demand and they are created ahead of a peak selling season. So the example given is Diwali. So Diwali time, crackers. Now people don't buy crackers before Diwali, right? They start buying crackers only a week or so before the Diwali or Christmas or the festoons or the lights, you know, the fancy lights, etc. that you put up. So people who manufacture these, they will be timing their production in such a way that the demand is going to peak only during that particular time, and they will build up the inventory over a period of time just to start selling it before the event. Promotion program. So many a times companies will ramp up the production and build up inventory in anticipation of a major sale, because when there is a promotion program, then likely that people will buy the product in more numbers and there will be a surge in demand. Vacation shutdown. So you must have seen that when there was Beijing Olympics, they announced that all industries around Beijing will be shut down. So what did they do? They produced the material and they kept huge inventories and they announced to the world that, look, we are going to be shut for this period of time and whatever material you require, please order it now. So what they did was they built the inventory because they were forced to shut down. This also happens, you know, when companies are taking a major shutdown for, let's say, renovation, or there is a major overhaul of equipment, etc. So they will produce excess material and keep it so that while the manufacturing activity is coming to a halt, there is enough material available to the sales and marketing to continue the sales, and there is no stock out. Probable threat of a strike. So if there is a threat of a strike or so, they may produce excess material, throw it in the market, so that even if the unit is shut, the market will not run dry and there will be no stock out of the product. Fluctuation inventories. So they are held to cover the random, unpredictable fluctuations in supply and demand or in lead times. So the fluctuation can happen in supply and demand. So imagine that you are selling refrigerators, and currently you're selling 1,000 refrigerators, or I'll better take an example of an air conditioner. Now you know that during the summer months, the sale goes up. Company has already factored it and they have made a provision that we will be selling around 2,000 air conditioners per month during this period. But because of excess demand, that 2,000 becomes 2,500. Now this fluctuation, if the company is not prepared or does not hold adequate stock, there will be a stock out. And a stock out, as I said, will be loss of opportunity, because naturally people will go and buy the competition product. So you need to keep some material. Although you think that you're going to sell 2,000, you have to keep some safety stock so that in case the demand is higher, you don't lose out on the opportunity. The second part is on the lead time. Imagine that your material, raw material, is coming from Europe. The transit time is 1 month, but the order lead time is, let's say, 2 months. That means I place the order, my supplier has to manufacture the material for me and then ship it out. It comes by sea, I have to clear it, custom clear it, etc. So the total time from the time I release the order till the time I receive the material in my warehouse is going to be 2 months. Now, something like what is happening currently in the Red Sea, you know that Suez Canal, a lot of people are not using the Suez Canal and they have to make a detour around the Cape of Good Hope, which means that your transit time, your shipping time is going up by another 15 days. So earlier, it was taking 2 months, now it's going to take me 2.5 months. What that will result in is there is a possibility of a stock out. And I need to factor in. So if there is a change in the lead time for the material to reach me, I should not stock out. So on both these count, one, the fluctuation in demand. Second, fluctuation in the lead time. So both these things, I have to factor it in and I have to hold some safety stock for that. And that is the fluctuation inventory. So longer the lead time, larger will be the safety stock. Suppose you are able to order a material and you get it within a day, then you don't need to keep much safety stock. Let us say your requirement per day is 10 numbers of a particular item. Then you need to have a safety stock of only 10 or 20. But imagine I use 10 items per day, but the lead time is 30 days. Then I have to keep a safety stock of at least 300, because 30 into 10, that will be the kind of safety stock that I'll be required to hold. Lot size inventories or cycle inventory, they are held to take advantage of quantity discount. So we already saw this, that when we are buying material from the suppliers, we are getting certain discount for buying a larger quantity. It may also be because he is delivering the material to our doorsteps. So he finds that whether he supplies 50 pieces or he supplies 200 pieces, his transportation cost is fixed. So he says, okay, if you buy 200 pieces, then I save on the transportation cost and I give you that as a quantity discount. So sometimes you want to take advantage of the quantity discount. Sorry. Second is to reduce the shipping, clerical and setup cost. Shipping cost, because even if it's a full container or if it is a partial container, shipping cost will be more or less the same. Clerical cost, so let's say you are importing material and you are custom clearing the consignment. So there is a fixed cost to that custom clearance, etc., or for transportation of material from the port to your warehouse. So these are the costs you can optimize by ordering a higher quantity, because the fixed cost will be then spread over a larger quantity. So in case it is impossible to make or purchase items at the same rate at which they are sold, then you try to optimize it by buying a larger lot size so as to optimize your cost. Now, what is your average cycle inventory? So what is your beginning of the cycle inventory divided by 2? Please read this as beginning cycle inventory. The inventory is wrapping around and coming on the second line, but that's one single sentence. So imagine you are having a cycle of inventory where you are buying, let's say, 1,000 pieces at one time. So you buy 1,000 pieces. Imagine that you are going to get the next lot only when your inventory reaches zero. So from 1,000, over a period of time, the inventory will gradually get consumed and becomes zero, right? Now, if you look at this cycle, the average inventory you are going to hold will be half of the inventory at the beginning of the cycle. That means that 1,000 pieces that you are ordering divided by 2, that means your average holding of the inventory will be 500 numbers. That this is what we are saying here. Transportation inventories. So these inventories exist because of the time needed to move goods from one location to another in a supply chain. For example, from plant to distribution center or to a customer. Here again, the formula is average inventory in transit is equal to transit times in days multiplied by the annual demand. Now, annual demand divided by 365 will tell you what is the average demand per day. So just to make it simple, let us say the average demand per day is 100 numbers, and transit time is 5 days. So then your average inventory in transit, we said annual demand, daily demand is 100. So 5 into 100 will be 500. So 500 pieces will be the average inventory in transit. Now you can convert it into value depending upon what is the value of your product. So this is your average inventory in transit. Transportation inventories. The example that we just saw, we will see a mathematical example. Sundaram Bolds finds that the delivery of their main raw material from their major supplier takes 15 days on average. and they consume 15,000 tons of this raw material each year. And let's say this raw material is nothing but steel rods from which they make the bolt. So what will be the size of the transportation inventory? And what is the answer? So 15 days is the average transportation time or the transit time. 15,000 is the yearly requirement divided by 365 days, which will give you the average requirement per day. And that comes to 616 tons. So that means at any given point of time, an average of 616 tons will be in transit. Okay. So with that, we come to the end of this chapter. Thank you.